This is Kevin Harlan. This Friday, the NBA on Prime crew and I are back with another exciting Emirates NBA Cup doubleheader. First, Bam Adebayo and the Heat take on Jalen Brunson and the Knicks. Then, Steph Curry and the Warriors square off against Wemby and the Spurs. If you're not a Prime member, just sign up for a free 30-day trial. Heat Knicks, Warriors Spurs. Coverage starts Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, only on Prime. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, boy, oh, boy. What are we, the penultimate week of March, essentially? Man, time sure is a-flying, and the weather is a-changing, and... heck, summer will be here before we know it. Doesn't it feel like spring doesn't last as long as it used to? I don't know. Is that just me? Or where it's like, okay, in April we'll probably have some 30, 40 degree days, and then all of a sudden in May we'll have a 92 degree day. Yes, but we will enjoy the spring that we do have. Hello, hi, how the heck are you? Boy, oh boy, I'm excited about today's show because... Well, one of my favorite people will be the guest this week. I sure love this person a lot. Always get a kick hanging out with them. My guest this week is you, of course. Hi. Oh, boy, you look good. I hope you're feeling good as well. I'm doing fine. Mildly under the weather. If you guys listen to the big show in the mornings, you know that last week, Tom was under the weather, and Chick even missed a day because he had a cold. Well, guess who was third in line? That's right. Over the weekend, I spent a fair amount of time under a blanket. Nothing major, but I'm a gigantic baby when I'm sick. I think a lot of guys are. In fact, I read this study one time that showed that there is like some scientific evidence and like some biological reasons as to why men are so whiny when they're sick and women aren't. Apparently, the common cold and things like that are harder on men than they are women. And I've always applauded women for being so like, dude, we've all known moms and wives and stuff who they're like, they're sick, but they really don't miss a beat at all. It's insane. Well, apparently, they're not as the study said that they're not as women are not as affected physically by the symptoms of an illness. Look, that might be the case, but I'm also going to say that when it comes to being sick, men are just whinier. in my experience or whatever, I know for me, I am a giant baby when I'm not. At homeostasis. I can't stand it. And I'm still sort of there a little bit. And it's also weird getting a cold in the age of COVID-19 where you go, okay, is this it? Did I finally contract it? The answer is no. For me in this case. But you still go, oh geez, all right. Anyway, yes. So even though I'm a little under the weather, I'm look, we're going to have a great time. Well, for many reasons, one of which we have a terrific sponsor this week. Oftentimes, sponsors will seek me out, and I will happily push their product, whether it be a cool breeze or a glass of ice water. But this week, occasionally, and this week is no exception, somebody will introduce me to a sponsor and say, hey, how about you contact so-and-so and maybe talk about them on your show? Well, this is the case this week. Nathan wrote in, and he suggested a sponsor. And by gosh, if it isn't the sponsor this week, we were able to work it out. This week's sponsor, a roll of tape. And I'm going to tell you why this is an important sponsor. Rolls of tape, I think, are something we take for granted. But if you think about it, when you need tape and you don't have it, man, is that annoying. Let's say you're it's Christmas Eve and you're getting ready to wrap presents, and all of a sudden you realize you don't have any Scotch tape, or you've got just enough, but then, like, in the middle of wrapping presents, all of a sudden you're pulling the tape out and it just comes to a dead stop, and you go, oh, I'm at the end. Oh man, nothing. That's super annoying. Or if you have something where just a little bit of duct tape would perfectly fix, or maybe even just temporarily repair something, and you don't have it, it's like, oh, this is so annoying. I love tape, and I thank Nathan for getting me in touch with the tape folks, because I think a roll of tape is wonderful. I have a secret. You know, here's a quick Arnold confession. I often do this. I love the smell of Scotch tape. I don't know what it is. When I pull off some Scotch tape, I always have to smell. I love the smell of Scotch tape, and I like the feel of it as well. I like, the tackiness. Oftentimes, I'll just put it like a strip on my hand. If there's Scotch tape around. There was Scotch tape sitting at my spot. For the Bob and Tom show, and I always would tear a strip off and put it on the back of my hand and just sort of rub the smoothness of it. I know it's a weird thing to do, but I can't help it. I love the smell. I love the feel. I love Scotch tape. There's a particular reason why Nathan loves Scotch tape. He wrote in saying that he's a hockey player, professional no less, and he did not say why he recommended a roll of tape, but I know why. And any of you familiar with hockey, even rudimentarily, even just sort of if you're just a very new fan or a general, you know that hockey players tape up their sticks, and they're always taping things up. So he loves it for that. Oh, boy, tape is great. You fix things. It sticks to stuff. It smells good. and I'm sure you have your favorite tape, whether it be Scotch or duct or masking or electrical tape. Electrical tape, I like. I really like it when used properly. But the problem with electrical tape is, if you've ever tried to fudge, so if you're like, okay, I need something, I don't have duct tape, but this electrical tape will probably do. It doesn't always do. It's really just meant for electronics and like cables and things. It doesn't quite work if you're, say, trying to affix something to a wall, or at least in my experience, it just, you know, it tends to, the tackiness doesn't tend to last on things like that. So, but I still love it. Oh boy. All right. If you thought that was exciting, wait until the week when our sponsor is Zip Ties. Oh, you guys are going to lose your minds. How much I have to say about those. But that's a little farther down the road. Thank you, Roll of Tape, for being our sponsor. And I hope you enjoy a roll of tape sometime soon. You know, what do we normally do here? Do we do Vocabulary Station and then What I Enjoyed? Yes. Boy, episode 24, and I still have no idea. But I am excited about this trip to, well, I'll say no more. In fact, let's just hop on board and get right to Vocabulary Station. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Nothing like a nice train. It sounded like that whistle ended in a tunnel, kind of. It had sort of a, that was an interesting effect. Isn't that exciting when you're on a train and you go through a tunnel? Or even, do you still get excited as a grown person? If you are, and if the person, if you are an adult, because I know that I'm huge with the 7 to 12-year-old demographic. But yes, if you're, do you still get kind of excited when you have to drive through a tunnel? I do. I like it. Even though there's that fear, like if the tunnel's a little too long, you go, oh man, what happens if either side collapses? And, well, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? There's got to be a, I bet there's a specific phobia for tunnels. I'll have to look that up. But, anyway, where the hell were we? Oh, yes, that's right. We were going to Vocabulary Station and, okay. We've just made our way out of the tunnel. We were stopped there for a short break. There was something impeding the track. They moved it. It was a cow, and the engineer was able to slam on the brakes and stop and remove the cow. By the way, the reason I say cow is I also read an article once about, and this is very unpleasant, so I won't get into specifics, but about the astronomical number of cows that are hit by trains. So if you're ever interested, Google that. So okay, so here we are at Vocabulary Station. Last week, did you have fun with Sprunt? Did you get to use Sprunt at all? Or maybe more than once? I hope you did. I couldn't remember who supplied me with the word Sprunt, but I looked it up. Josh, thank you very much. How did I forget your name? So, Josh, thank you again for last week and the word Sprunt. Well, and if for some reason you haven't listened to last week, it's okay. Sometimes some folks like to listen out of order. There are many definitions, or a handful of definitions for Sprunt. The best of which, though, is the Scottish definition, which means boys chasing girls around haystacks after dark. Okay, there you go. this is a wild word today. It's, look, you're not going to use this one very often, but when you get the chance, I think you're going to enjoy having this in your arsenal of words. I know I do. The word is an adjective, and it's ranivorous. Ranivorous. R-A-N-I-V-O-R-O-U-S. Ranivorous. So we all know what carnivorous and is, or what herbivores are. I don't think I've ever heard the word herbivorous. Is that how, if you're a carnivore, you're carnivorous. If you're a herbivore, are you herbivorous? Huh. Anyway, ranivorous means... So you can already tell by this that it's going to be about eating. Well, ranivorous means frog eating. Isn't it weird? There's a word for that, frog eating. So the other night I went to a very nice restaurant. And as an appetizer, I started out, we all shared a big serving of frog legs. We were quite the ranivorous group at that moment. Man, oh man. So, you know, you could say snakes are ranivorous, things like, it just means frog eating. Fascinating. Did you know that there was a time in American history when folks in certain areas that are mostly desert, they were tired of hunting. They kind of hunted most of the huntable desert animals out of existence. So some folks decided to get these gigantic bullfrogs shipped in to these desert areas so that they could hunt them. They could gig for them. Because they were kind of out of desert animals. And what ended up happening was these bullfrogs took over. They took over. They completely changed and some would say destroyed the ecosystem in some of these desert areas. And just and so there weren't enough frog hunters to sort of take care of it. And they have completely altered the landscape of those areas. And if you look this up, these bullfrogs are, they will eat anything. In fact, they are not above cannibalism. So some of these frogs are renivorous. They will eat smaller bullfrogs. But you can find pictures and footage of these things eating snakes, eating giant tarantulas, eating, like I said, other frogs. It's really fairly gnarly, actually, what these frogs are doing. It's crazy. And it's also pretty crazy that there were, like, cowboys at one point. They went, we need to hunt some frogs. Let's get these frogs. What? Well, yeah, we killed all the coyotes, and so now we're going to get these frogs out here. How strange. And I don't know that they were gigging for them, meaning I don't know that they had pointed sticks that they were jabbing the frogs with. They may have been using guns, but that's what a fascinating story with a really unexpected, to them, result that the bullfrogs would go, hey, we don't mind it out here, and they totally took over. Anyway, renivorous, a fun word. It just means frog eating, so try to use it sometime. Ask maybe at home today, ask your kids. Just go, hey, what animals are most renivorous? And if they go, well, what does that mean? Just go, well, look it up, and then we'll talk about it. Make them get out the get online or get out the dictionary. I think you may enjoy that. You know what I enjoyed this week? Many things, but I'm going to tell you specifically about what I enjoyed this week. Will you look at this bullfrog? Oh, look at him. Walking out of the saloon there with his 10-gallon hat on. Where are you going, bullfrog? Will you get out of this desert? Haven't you eaten enough of the local wildlife? Go back. Go where there's water. Don't you need water? And if you're not picturing this bullfrog walking on its hind legs, then you're not doing it right. If you think it's just a regular frog hopping like a frog, no. This thing is strutting down the street. Look at that. His cowboy hat on, his six shooter in that belt there. I would pay good money to watch a movie called Cowboy Bullfrogs. In fact, I may write it so I don't have to pay to watch it. In fact, I'll get paid for it to be a thing. Frogs in the West. Frogs in the Old West. Ah, Pixar, give me a call. So, I enjoyed a lot of things this week. I've been catching up on a lot of movies. I know it probably seems like I watch movies all the time, and I may watch more movies than most, but there have been, I haven't, a lot of the current stuff I hadn't seen, so I watched, Promising Young Woman, which I liked, and Nomadland, which I loved, and Pat Godwin and Chick McGee had seen it, and they hate it. And if you listen to the Big Morning Show, you may know that they hated it. I completely disagree with those fellows. I loved it, and I'm not ashamed to say it really it hit me hard, and I cried, and I loved that movie. And the text exchange that Godwin, Chick, and I had when I wrote them and I said, hey, fellas, look, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this. I thought Nomadland was wonderful and I couldn't have loved it more. And the subsequent beating I took from those two. I wish I'm a text deleter. I delete texts pretty much as soon as I respond to them or whatever. I just get rid of the whole conversation. So I don't have the transcript of it, but Pat and Chick do, because we've been laughing about it for a few days now, and maybe I'll try to get that exchange and post it somewhere or something, or maybe next week I'll just tell you exactly what was said. But yeah, did they let me have it for liking that movie. Well, the one I wanted to talk to you about, though, is an oldie, and you guys know that I love my Turner Classic Movies, and I've been catching up on a lot of classics. Well, this is one that I had seen long, long ago. I mean, a long time ago, 20 plus years. And I thought it was, yeah, okay, yeah, that was good. And then I revisited it over the weekend, and I, no, this isn't good. This is one of the greatest movies ever made. And, if you don't like movies in black and white and stuff like that, maybe it takes practice. I don't know. Because I remember hating them as a kid. Just the idea that it was old or something, I always kind of assumed, well, then I can't relate to it or anything like that. And it's just not true. Or that it won't be exciting or it'll be boring. Okay, older movies tend to be slower paced. But this one is as fast paced as anything that you'll see in a cinema this summer. I mean, it's... Oh, I might as well tell you what it is. It's called... and many of you have seen it, The Third Man. The Third Man came out in 49, and it's just a classic mystery thriller film noir directed by Carol Reed, written by the wonderful novelist and screenwriter Graham Greene, who's I've read a couple of his books and just love them, and starring Joseph Cotten and Orson Welles and, well, one of the top femme fatales of her day, Valley, or Alida Valley, but she went by Valley, just her last name, for a while. It's just an awesome movie. A writer travels to see his friend, as soon as he gets there, he's gonna start doing a kind of working for his friend. And as soon as he gets there, the friend's not answering the door, and he finds out that the guy died, that his friend. Had died like a couple days before. He had been hit by a car. And you know, okay, well, how did this guy not know? Well, in 49, they would have had to have written him a letter overseas because the friend was in Vienna. He had to travel all the way to Vienna for this. And he wouldn't have, there's a good chance that a phone call wasn't made and all that stuff. So he finds out he's dead. And then he sort of gets embroiled in finding out who killed the friend. And that's, I'm not going to tell you anything else from there, except that it's so wonderfully acted, so wonderfully filmed. I'm telling you, black and white has never been more beautiful in this. The shadows and the light and the framing of every shot is just gorgeous. And it's, it really is one of the greatest movies ever made in terms of look and feel. And I really think you might find it pretty exciting. Give it a shot. The Third Man. Oh, just a classic. And if you've seen it, you know. But look, if you saw it and you didn't care for it, that's all right. Maybe a second viewing, you'll like it a little bit more. Or maybe you don't need it. Maybe you went, no, I kind of don't like it. So anyway, I sure got a thrill out of it. The Third Man. Great stuff. Last week or the week before, something like that, we were discussing on the morning show embarrassing photos. And I went through some photos and I found a few embarrassing pics and sent them to Chris Spangle, our social media director. And I don't know if he's gotten all of them out yet or not in terms of, I know he put out Allsman's and Jess Hooker's and Ace. I know they all have their embarrassing photos out. One of them that I sent Pat, or Chris Spangle, sorry, I had Godwin on the mind there for a second because I figured he would be, I'm sure he's got so many great stories and stuff that he must have some terrific photos of him out there. So one of the pictures I sent Spangle was of it was one of my senior photos, and I guess when you take senior pictures, I had forgotten this until I just found them looking for embarrassing pics, that you changed outfits. Like you'd get dressed up for one picture and then you would wear sort of casual the next, oftentimes next to very large numbers denoting what year you were graduating. So it's like me leaning on a giant 96. Kind of dorky or whatever, but everybody did it. And you also, you could take pictures in your like football uniform or your cheerleading uniform, whatever. Just to show, hey, this is, as a senior, these were some of the things I was doing. And I got a photo of me in my show choir outfit. That's right. I was in show choir. Premier was the name of it. And looking upon it, it's kind of embarrassing what we were wearing. Look, they worked for what we were doing. We were the show choir. We would sing and dance and perform. And so I guess the idea was to look flashy and sort of Vegas-y or whatever. And so we wore these sequined vests and bow ties and tuxedo pants and a tuxedo shirt, complete with cufflinks and all that. And the buttons that you don't use the white buttons on the shirt. You use those like tuxedo button things that go in. They're kind of like cufflinks, but and the colors that were chosen was it was fuchsia. So it was like this very bright pink, glittery looking, shiny vest and bow. And anyway, I thought some of you guys, some of the listeners would get a kick out of seeing me in that sort of getup. And so, in fact, I haven't been on Instagram, but I think I may go on there and just really quickly post that and then get off again so that you guys can see what I'm talking about. I will do that. And, but it got me thinking, and some of you have written in asking about my days with the show choir. It got me thinking about being in show choir. And it's weird because I have conflicting feelings now. Back when I was doing it, when I was in high school, I started as a freshman. My high school was interesting. It was brand new. So my class, we were the first students to go to this high school. My older brother, when he went to high school, he had to travel like 30 minutes away. That was like the nearest high school to us in our school district. And so he would take the bus or drive, you know, that far but they finally built this one closer to our house, and my class was the first to be in there. So it started as ninth. Yeah. Okay. So it was weird. My junior high was abnormal in that it was 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, and then you went to high school 10th, 11th, and 12th. Well, most high schools, as I'm sure many of you know, were freshmen through senior, so 9, 10, 11, 12. So I went to my junior high for 2 years, and then when 9th grade rolled around, we moved to this brand-new high school. So it was just us. You know what? I am lying to you. Okay, here's exactly what happened. We were sophomores when we moved into the new high school. So I did have 3 years at that junior high. And then when I was in 10th grade, the new high school opened. So it was sophomores and freshmen only. So I was an upperclassman all through high school. And I remember some teachers giving us a hard time going, you guys don't know what it's like to have seniors picking on you or who to look up to and all this stuff. And we were like, yeah, it's pretty great. So the class of 96 and 95 were really close in terms of everybody was sort of friends. It didn't matter that somebody was in 10th grade or somebody was in 9th grade. So anyway, the show choir, that first year, my sophomore year, I loved acting and plays and stuff, but I wasn't too interested in the singing and dancing. I had been in chorus and musicals and things, but it just wasn't. So I decided to go out for the crew, the stage crew, tech crew is what we called it. My one of my best friends at the time, Brian Arnold, no relation. He and I auditioned to be tech crew for the show choir, and a lot of my other best friends were auditioning to be singers and dancers. Well, everybody that auditioned made it. There were, I don't know, boy, I'm going to say 12 couples or 20, something like that. So, no, there had to have been less. It was probably about 12. And so, and it worked out to where everybody was, according to the director of the show choir, a great guy named Mr. Blaylock, he decided, hey, everybody's in. And so Brian and I made the tech crew. And so we ran lights and sound for all the shows and all the rehearsals and all that stuff. And that was my first year in show choir. Well, the director knew that I was a performer in plays and all that stuff. And all my friends were in the show choir. And they all sort of talked to me about auditioning to be a performer in the show choir. And I thought, man, it does seem like fun, huh? You get to dance with these girls and joke around. And because on the tech crew, we were fairly separated. We were always up in these giant catwalks at the theater of our school. And we were up there in the lighting booth and the sound booth and near the spotlights and all that stuff. And everybody else was down on stage and in between rehearsing. There'd be, you know, they were all joking around down there. And Brian and I had a great time. We were always joking around. But I kind of wanted to be more part of all the fun and the flirting and the joking, namely. So real quick, a quick aside about the catwalk. We, one time, I'm surprised that we were able to kind of talk our teachers into letting us do this, but I was MC of the talent show every year I was in high school, with my, one of my best friends, Nick. I was best man in his wedding. He and I co-hosted with a few others in later years, talent shows. And one year, the first year, I said, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we thank the tech crew, Brian and the guys, and we talk about how what a professional and good job they're doing, and then we drop a dummy from the catwalk ceiling, which was way high up. Like, if you've ever been in a giant theater or auditorium, look, if you fell from the... And so we're like, yeah, somebody could throw a dummy dressed as one of the tech crew, and it would fall, and then we would just kind of stand there awkwardly, like, oh, I guess they're not as professional as we thought. Well, we were given the okay to do this. And so during one rehearsal, which was after school, we're running through this. And Brian, up in the catwalk, screams and throws the dummy over the ledge just as the Palm Squad is entering the area. And so all the Palm Squad heard was, so it was like 25 girls or whatever. All they heard was this scream, and then they saw a body drop from the catwalk and hit a table crazy violently and then hit the floor. And three of the girls, I'll never forget, all the girls screamed because they thought they had just witnessed somebody actually falling. And three of them not only screamed, they dropped to their knees and covered their eyes. And I couldn't stand it. I was laughing so hard about all of it. I also have to tell you, one of my favorite things in comedy is when a dummy is thrown off something. So if you ever see old like Benny Hills, where the editing is real rough and like he's running and then all of a sudden it cuts and then they show a dummy falling off a cliff and it's just ragged and raggedy and just hitting the... Or Married with Children is also great at it, too. You'll hear Al Bundy scream, and then you'll see a dummy fall just so loosely and awkwardly in the background or whatever. So I was laughing at the way the dummy looked and just the perfect timing of these poor girls thinking they had just witnessed a death. And, boy, man, they were not happy. They didn't think me laughing was funny. They didn't think... They were mad. They were upset. They were... rightfully upset. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. So I went, all right, yeah, maybe I will audition to be part of the choir itself, dance and sing. But if I don't make it, can I still be on tech crew? And the director said, no. If you audition and you don't make it, you're just out. And I went, all right, that's strict but fair or whatever. And I went, you know what? I'm going to go for it. I think I can make it. I think I can audition. And because the director also made it pretty clear that like by the way, you had to audition every year. If you were in show choir as a freshman, you weren't necessarily in it as a sophomore. You had to audition. So there was this giant fear over the whole group that, oh, man, what if somebody doesn't make it and the rest of us do and all this stuff. So anyway, I auditioned and made it, and everybody made it. It was one of those things where he added to the group and he didn't take anybody away. So I became a singer dancer with Premiere my junior year. And then I made it again in my senior year. At the time I enjoyed being surrounded by my friends and all the joking we did and the traveling. We got to travel to Chicago and New York City and Toronto and all this, but I don't think I liked the performing that much. First off, and I don't think it took me a little while to realize this. like well after I graduated high school to go, I don't think I really liked it. I liked the camaraderie, and I liked all the perks that went along with being in. And by the way, the show choir here, like the girl, a lot of the guys were some of the most popular guys in school, and a lot of the girls were some of the hottest and most popular girls in school. And I think I've told you guys this before, that I was sort of a social butterfly. I could hang with the cool kids because I made them laugh, but I wasn't athletic and I wasn't the hottest dude. And I got pretty good grades, so I was also kind of a nerd, so I could hang with the nerds as well. They didn't feel out of place talking to me, so whatever. And I've told you that my buddy Jeff Wesselsmith, when I was he asked me if I was cool in school, and I said, well, I wasn't popular, but I wasn't a nerd. I could kind of hang out with everybody. And his classic line was, well, sounds like nerd talk to me. Essentially saying that I'm a nerd, just trying to defend myself or whatever. So, but it was true. I think I was well-liked in school because I was funny and a pretty nice guy. So that got me fairly far socially. So anyway, I liked all that stuff, but I the rehearsals were taken so seriously, and I get it. We were supposed to do a good job, but looking back at some of like the, come on, guys, this is important. Well, not really. What are we doing? I mean, I don't know. And I know a lot of my friends disagree with me to this day who were in that show choir. I'm like, no, we wanted to do a good job and we wanted it to be a nice performance. Yeah, but I mean, we were getting yelled at in rehearsal, and I don't know. It just seems it seems a little silly. But, you know, maybe that's how some of these things go as you get older. The stuff, I mean, this is obvious, but the stuff that you thought was really, really important in high school, how much of that is really that important to you now? I mean, besides the fact that you're not around the same people in the same sort of situations, but boy, when you're that age, and try to tell a 16-year-old that what they're going through now won't matter to them in 10 years. It's impossible to believe. Because I had that told to me, you know. Hey, you know, that girl doesn't like you, and I know you're heartbroken now, but pretty soon you won't even remember it. And, okay, but right now it feels like I'm dying. So that advice isn't really that good. Like, I would never... First off, there are a couple things that I decided that I would never do to my nieces or my kids when I have them. I do plan on having kids at some point, and whether they be stepkids or my own, whatever. I mean, if I had stepkids, trust me, they would be my own. But meaning I would, that's exactly how I would love them. But you know what I mean, biological, whatever. I decided that I would never say to them that, hey, it's not as bad as you think. And I will also not say to them, this is the best time of your life. That was told to me so many times by not really my parents, but by just other people, aunts and uncles or friends of the family. They just go, hey, these are the greatest days you'll ever have. Cherish them, you know, never worry. Oh, boy, can we really all look back at junior high and high school and go, yeah, those were the best days I ever had. I get what they're saying. They're saying your responsibilities are less than what they will be. You've got your whole life ahead of you. The decisions you make now aren't maybe they're not as detrimental as they could be at another time. You're out having fun. You're learning. You're exploring new things in the world. I get why somebody would be inclined to tell a young person that these are the best days of your life. But I think I don't think that rings very true to the young person. I think they go, "Are you kidding me? I have to go to school. Everything I do is pretty much I have to do chores. I have to do my homework. I'm not allowed to stay out or stay up as long as I want or as late as I want. I mean, there's so many rules, and I think they're going, you're nuts. And, look, I don't want to be I don't mean to be another person bringing up this point, because I think you've probably heard this said ad nauseum. I think it's way harder. That my generation might be the first, and I guess I'm technically Gen X, but might be the first generation that can honestly say the kids now have it harder than we did. And I truly believe that. For as much as I also like to joke about millennials, I truly feel that because of the introduction of the internet and social media, being a kid now is harder than when I was in school. Because when I was in school, if I had a bad day, let's say somebody picked on me, or a teacher gave me a raw deal on a grade, or anything, just a bad day, I could go home and not worry about it. But what do a lot of kids do now when they go home? They get online and they check their Facebook and their Instagram, and they are either seeing what the folks on, what their friends are posting, which tend to be happier and not totally reflective of everything they're going through. You know what I mean? You can go to somebody's page and go, wow, they went to the beach and there they are smiling with friends, and oh, there she is hugging her boyfriend. What a great life. Well, they're leaving out the crap that you're dealing with at the same time. You know what? And maybe they're even getting, the bullying doesn't stop online. They're picked on at school, and they go home and they open up their page and there are, three nasty comments on their wall. What a bummer. They can't escape it. So I think it is a little harder for youth today than it was for us. My point, I've completely lost, but it all goes back to, people telling me, either making me believe, trying to make me believe that my days in high school were the best of my life, or so it's almost like, which is it? I'm getting conflicting advice here. These are either the greatest days of my life, which would inherently mean I'll never forget them and I'll always look back on them as being important and mattering a lot. Or at the same time, I was being told, well, look, your problems today don't really matter. That they won't matter to you later. All right. Well, which is it? It's either the greatest or it won't matter. And I know there's a difference there. They're trying to tell me to have fun. And they're also saying, hey, don't sweat some of this stuff. It's not as bad as you think. And to a certain degree, both of those points are fair. They are. But they do not ring as true to the person you're talking to. So just be mindful of what they're going through. I say, what I like to do, and this isn't easy, as parents, as you parents of teenagers know. I only know this from friends, kids, and my niece and nephew who are older, a couple nephews and niece. My other nieces are way young. I don't have to worry about this yet. But I really like hearing about them. I don't have any real interest in giving advice to a teenager. Unless if they were to ask for it, or, obviously, if they wanted some guidance or they wanted a little reassurance or advice, I'm happy to do that. But otherwise, I want to hear about what they're doing and how they are. And the reason I said that this can be hard is because teenagers aren't the most vocal oftentimes. They don't really care to share with you. But what my goal is, as an uncle, as a friend, and as a future parent, is to not give them the impression that I have no idea what it feels like and that I've forgotten what they're going through, that kind of thing. And I bet that's hard, man, especially your kid. I mean, if your kid is hurting in some way, if they're being picked on, or if they're unhappy for whatever reason, or maybe they didn't make the football team or the Palm Squad, whatever. That has to really hurt as a mom or a dad. I I don't know. That's got to be tough. And so the easiest and quickest thing that may come to your mind is, hey, you're going to get over this. Don't worry about it. Or don't worry about not making the team. Try to focus on the other stuff because these are the best days of your life. So I think there are definite reasons why those sort of cliches get thrown around. But I don't know. It's those are hard pitfalls to avoid, I think. And and I certainly don't want you to think that I'm an expert on any of this. These are just sort of my feelings now. And again, I'm not a parent. So when I have kids, maybe my feelings will totally change on this matter. But it's just interesting. I mean, when I look back at Show Choir now, I go, in my head, I go, that should have been more fun than it was. I think we kind of made it less fun by taking it so seriously. So the time we weren't performing were a lot of fun. The shows, there were also little things too that I just couldn't, I don't know. They just weren't for me. Anytime we'd fly, like if we flew to New York City for our trip or Toronto or whatever, inevitably the stewardess would get on the intercom system and go, well, we have a very special group here with us today. It's the premier show choir from Rockwood Summit High School. And they're going to sing a little song for all of you. And in my head, I'm going, all right, you think those two businessmen over there worrying about the meeting that they're going to care about this at all? Do you think they want this? Do you think that lady enjoying her book wants who wants this? And I'll be honest, a lot of people seemed pleased with our little performances on the planes, and we would get applause or whatever, but I didn't care for it. Because, and maybe I'm just being a jerk. I think if I were on a plane now and I was in a bad mood, the last thing I'd want to hear is some school choir singing. I don't know. Maybe I would enjoy it. I think I am kind of playing up the grouchiness here. When stuff like that happens, I cry when I go to my niece's Christmas recitals, and so there's a chance I'm totally full of it here. But I do remember one time we were asked to sing a song on an airplane, and we couldn't do our faster numbers. Of course, it wouldn't make sense for us to sing these really upbeat numbers, like stuff that. Where we did all these elaborate dance moves and stuff too. So we would do the slower songs, the songs that would. So if you were to go see a premiere show, here's what would happen. It would be like we'd open up with a really upbeat number. Like we did Taking Care of Business, and we did Turn the Beat Around. And oh man, what is that? What's that Bob Seger song from, Shakedown, if you remember that one from the 80s. Shakedown, breakdown, take down. So we would do these, and then the lights would dim, and we would all sit on the risers that were on stage in sort of different poses, very stoically, and we would sing a slow number. Well, that's one of the numbers we did on a flight one time. And I'm not joking. The song was James Taylor's Fire and Rain, which is about a plane crash. That's right. We were on a crowded flight singing a song about a plane that went down and killed the lover of, at the very least, the narrator of that song. Not to mention it was a true story of James Taylor's, but and I'm looking back and go, who thought that was a good idea? And I really wish somebody, some adult who was just flying on that plane during the middle of that song would have stood up and gone, is this a joke? You know what that song's about, right? There's a lyric that says, flying machines in pieces on the ground. Don't do this one. Oh, well. I tell you what, though, when you're 17, 18, you're a male and you have the opportunity to dance with some of the hottest girls in your school do it. That was really, really fun. It was, just flirting with, and it was great. Some of the girls would, and guys were items. They were boyfriend and girlfriend, and sometimes they would break up, and there would be drama in the show choir room that day, I tell you. And sometimes they'd get back together. Sometimes, oh my gosh, I remember one particular incident. A couple broke up in show choir. And the next day, that girl was with another guy in show choir. And, let the gossip begin. That, I was actually sort of part of one of these things. I was, through most of my high school, I was what I thought, at the time, in love, just in love with this girl. I mean, crazy about her. And what would happen, and one of the reasons one of the reasons I spent most of my high school pining over this girl and not dating other girls, which was the case, is because what would happen is I would show a lot of interest in her and pretty much tell her, hey, why don't we go out? I'd be a great boyfriend and all this stuff. And she would say, no, no. And so I would back off. And every time I backed off, she would come on strong. She would write me notes and call and flirt and, put her hand on my knee or my shoulder. And I went, oh, my gosh, this is going to happen now. She really does like me. And I would say, hey, why don't we? And she would say, no, I'm not interested. And so this cycle happened for a good 4 years. And by the way, I hold no ill will towards her at all. Not at all. In fact, I hold her in high esteem. She was a really talented singer, and she was funny, and she was a great actress. And I hope that she's, wherever she is living a wonderful life. I didn't know what I was doing. There were times where I would come on too strong, and I don't mean aggressive in like a physical way. It was more like, I can't live without you, that sort of stuff. just dramatic crap or whatever. Nothing morose, but just really just too strong for a girl in high school. You know what I mean? And I do think that she really wanted to like me. I do. I think that she wished that she were attracted to me or had feelings for me, whatever. But she just wasn't. And I do think there were times where she tried to be. But anyway, guess what she ended up doing 1 year? Well, she started dating Brian Arnold, my best friend at the time. And I would have to see them every day. By the way, that catch in my voice just now was a laugh. It was not. It wasn't crying. So, and we would go on these trips, and I would see them cuddling on the bus or the plane or whatever. And he's a great dude. And this mattered, I guess, back then. He called me, and he said, "Hey, she really likes me, and if you don't want me to date her, I won't. But I do like her, and I would like to. But I will not do it if it's going to affect our friendship." And I said, Brian, look, man, no, do it. She doesn't like me. Yes, I like her, but she doesn't like me. She likes you, and I am not going to get in the way of whatever you guys may have. So please do it. But I do want to be honest. This is going to sting, and there may be times where I don't want to be around it. I'm just letting you know. And he said, yes, of course. So everything ended up being fine. The only thing I have regrets on that is there were other girls I liked too, but I didn't follow through on it. And I kind of regret that. I would have liked to have dated more girls in high school. I think it would have been a lot. I think it would have been fun. And they were really cool. And, now, if they were to call me, if somebody were to call and say, hey, we're having a premiere reunion And we're hoping everybody attends. I would happily attend because as much as I look back and go, I didn't really enjoy it as much as I should have. I think we took it a little too seriously. I think some people who were in it took it way too seriously. And the yelling and criticisms and stuff didn't have to happen. We could have had a lot more fun. but they were all good people. And I would go back and have some laughs and share some memories. And I would be brutally honest and go, you know what? We took this crap way too seriously. And again, and it would cause, I think, some playful debate. I hope that you guys have, you know, that you're able to kind of look back and look back fondly on a lot of these things, whether they be classes you had or extracurricular activities or teams you were on or any of that, because high school can be really unpleasant, and it can also be some of the most fun you'll have. And that might be the message to tell a young person, not one or the other. But hey, this is going to suck, and it's also going to be awesome. So just do your best every day and encourage them. In fact, I had a lot of encouragement growing up from my family, my parents, my grandparents and friends telling me, hey, go try out for the show choir. You're a good little actor. Try out for these audition for these plays and MC the talent show and all that stuff. I was really encouraged. And I was also encouraged to do other things. I signed up for the football team 1 year and quickly realized, you know what? I'm simply not good at this. And I was even encouraged by some to quit certain things. Meaning, hey, look, you're not that great at this. Why not put that effort into double up your efforts in what you're good at? My dad told me that one time. He goes, look, you really did try. You tried at this sport or that sport or whatever, and it didn't work out. There's no shame in that at all because you tried and you tried hard. And boy, that really means a lot to me even now. So I say that we should make this what to work on this week. Yes. Boy. This is a song that would open up a premiere show for sure. I don't know if this little thing has lyrics or not. But we would come out and jazz hands it up. And I tell you what, our parents and grandparents, they couldn't have been more thrilled. They sure loved our shows. Very, very sweet and encouraging. And that's what we should work on this week. I think you're going to have fun with this. I'm looking forward to doing this. And I'm sure you do this anyway. But I'm looking forward to, and I know I do, I'm looking forward to doing it more. This week, encourage someone. Encourage one of your kids or your spouse or whoever you're in a relationship with or a coworker or something. First off, find out a little bit about what they're interested in. You probably already know. But kind of follow up on that. Just go, hey, you know, one time you mentioned forensic science because we were watching one of those crime shows together, and you said that that would be an interesting show. Have you put any more thought into that? And then, depending on what they say, encourage them. You know what? Good for you. I really hope that you explore this more. I think you'd be great at it, and I think you'd really enjoy it, and it wouldn't feel like a job to you because you'd love it so much. And you can even do the opposite. You know what? I kind of fell out of my interest in that waned, and I'm not too just go. Okay, well, look, keep looking. Don't worry. That's okay that you've decided that's not the way you want to go. I know you're going to find your path, and it's going to be terrific. Just give somebody a little encouragement this week. Encourage them to try something that they've wanted to try, or to continue with something that they're having difficulty in, but they do want to do. They'll really appreciate it, and I think you'll feel really good doing that because you know how good it feels to be encouraged. So next week is the 25th episode of that Josh Arnold podcast. And I hope, what is 25? What do you think 25 anniversary is? I hope that you will bring me paper or wood or whatever whatever the anniversary is. I've also been getting a lot of emails about how this show tends to end really abruptly and how I should probably like have a song or try to figure out some good way to end it. Bye!
Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling take you behind the scenes of one of the greatest shows of all time.
Their ultimate rewatch podcast. We're in the midst of season 7. And
Hold on. Obviously, we had a very successful television show for 10 years. That was Superman-based.
But we had to make everyone believe that you were Clark.
I gotta be honest, I was surprised at the end of this episode that I wasn't.
I was too!
Talkville, the Smallville rewatch podcast.
I'm not sure I knew when I was filming it that I was not me.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.